Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.
Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Mike Falzone breaks down the open mic comedy scene.
No matter what, it's always no bullshit. You know, it's like if you're... There's no hierarchy of comedy. There's no boss of comedy who's like, you're hired or you're fired. People take themselves out, you know? So if you go to an open mic with a bunch of people who actively don't want to hear what you have to say, they're just waiting for their turn to talk, and you get a laugh out of those people, yeah. That's how you know it's really funny.
Today on the show, comedian Mike Falzone talks about stand-up comedy, how to get in it, and how to stay in it. Stay close.
Hey, what's up? It's Mike Falzone, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week by actor Christian Mulmeen. And his story, Mike Falzone, was titled My Right Kidney.
Oh, no.
Super specific.
Yeah.
But I actually didn't even know him, and he's not a stand-up. He's an actor.
Mm-hmm.
But I found he Facebooked me, and I found his story about my right kidney so fascinating.
Yeah,
because he gave his kidney to his dad.
Oh my goodness!
And I also don't have. I lost my right kidney.
Yeah.
So it's like,
from what, can I ask?
I had cancer.
Oh my goodness!
And so then they took that kidney out.
Yeah, get it out.
I do not have to go to the bathroom more often.
Do not.
No, people. Think
I thought you were going to say ever.
No, but people think that would be a trick.
I was like, oh, I got to get rid of these things.
That would be a trick.
Yeah, right? It saves so much time.
The bladder is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The kidney filters.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a cog in the machine.
Anyway, it was a great conversation, and I had never met an organ donor.
Yeah.
And it was very fascinating. So you guys go back, listen to actor Christian Mulmeen from last week, but not now. Not now, because today I've got a fantastic comedian on the show, Mike Falzone, and he brings forth the topic, the truth behind open mics.
Yeah.
And
starring,
you know,
my right kidney.
Starring. And I don't, you know, I mean, across the country, I don't know, and across the world, we're talking to people all over the place. I'm big in Switzerland.
Nice.
You think I'm kidding you?
No, 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 not at all.
I'm always in the
that
top
sounds
20.
Like something you wouldn't make up.
I'm always in the top 20 in Switzerland. I don't know why.
I wish I could say something to immediately identify with that audience.
Yeah, like...
I love watches. Sure.
Or that's Sweden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you just lost everybody in Switzerland.
I enjoy their knives.
Yeah, good, good, good.
I enjoy a Swatch.
Sure. Uh-huh. Anything
and,
else?
And yeah, you know, I went to Zermatt on both of my honeymoons.
Oh, well... Then so you're very familiar.
Says something. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
You just keep
but
going
the
back.
Next time I get married, you know, if they say, where are we going on our honeymoon? I'm like,
I'm going to Bad Luck Mountain.
you've heard of the Matterhorn. Yeah. This doesn't Matterhorn. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're wondering, an open mic, I mean, in our experience, it's about comedy, a comedian's open mic.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they have them for music. They
Amen.
Have them for poetry. They have them for everything.
A lot of times it's one and all.
Yeah, I know. And I have to be honest with you. I don't like
when it's terrible.
One and all, because this guy goes up and sings this melody about his wife died and, you know, he's depressed. He's got to raise his child or whatever.
Then the next guy is like, you guys like dogs or what?
The comedy stylings of Mike Falzone.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's no consistency.
Yeah, I've been in that situation many times.
There's no rhythm. Mm-mm. And then the worst part in that situation to me is that musicians then talk.
Mm.
Not interested in the talking. You know what I mean? Play the music.
Yeah.
You know, guitar boy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was a talking guitar boy, and then I got rid of the guitar.
I read somewhere that you started touring at 14.
15 or 14, whenever I could get rides to go places.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
And you were playing rhythm guitar, or what were you playing?
Yeah, I was just plain old acoustic white guy, sad singer-songwriter for a long time.
American Pie, Billy Joel, what are you talking about?
Sure, sure, sure.
Sure, Brown Eyed Girl.
I was a big fan of Billy Joel, but I was like a, you know, Gavin DeGraw, Jason Mraz type.
Oh my gosh,
you know?
I think Jason Mraz has so much soul.
Yeah.
You know who else I bet you like?
Who?
I bet you like James Morrison.
I don't know
From
much
England,
James Morrison.
Same. Okay, well.
I'm sorry.
Strike one.
James Morrison, like, from The Doors?
No, I think he went by Jim. What's his name, James, do you think?
I don't know. I just thought I'd make a funny connection.
I don't think it was.
It was regular Jim. It says Jim on his birth certificate.
Yeah, like Jimi Hendrix. He wasn't James Hendrix, was he?
No, he's Jimmy with an I.
How about Jimmy J.J. Walker? Was he James?
No, James J.J. Walker.
Jimmy Fallon?
One of those J's in Jimmy J.J. Walker has to be James.
I would think maybe it's Jelly Jam.
Yeah, James Jelly Jam Walker.
Maybe it's Jerk Face.
Oh man.
No.
You know he listens.
Took it downtown. Yeah. I know. Right. Well, probably a big fan of storytelling.
Yeah.
So anyway, when you're talking about open mics, you're talking about comedy.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I'm anxious
in this particular
to hear,
instance.
Yeah, I'm anxious to hear your story. I know. I was telling you a little earlier that I went up the other night at the Improv, and between you and I and everybody else listening, and this might feed right into your story.
Yeah.
I got a guaranteed spot.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they usually pull names from a hat, and there might be 40 names in the hat.
Yeah.
And they pull like up to 20, say, or maybe 22, depending on what the next show is or when they have to stop. But because I've done so many shows at the Improv with Story Smash, my game show, that you're going to be on.
Yes. Very great transition.
So good.
We'll see if I can think of enough stories.
Oh, my gosh.
I've been bummed out about it for about a week.
I'm going to give you all the tricks.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. Perfect.
Exactly. But I will say that the other night at the Improv, I was fortunate enough for them to give me like a guaranteed spot. And so I met the host beforehand and I said, she said, when do you want to go up?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know, in the middle or whatever. And she said, okay, well, whenever you want to come up, just come over and see me.
Awesome.
And I'm like, that is never happened.
Doesn't it feel nice?
It was sweet, man.
Right?
But I got to say, my heart was pounding.
Nervous?
And I'm on stage frequently with my game show and storytelling, and I speak to podcast events and stuff. So I've definitely been on stage, but in that capacity where you are saying a sentence and you need a response.
Yeah.
I haven't had that in a while. So I get up there, man, and my heart was pounding. And then it was really good. I'm a little nervous to say it was so good. But
that's awesome. Don't be nervous.
Well.
Be proud of that.
Pretty well. 4 minutes.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks.
Did you write new jokes for that night?
All new. Yeah, all
nice.
New because I can't... How do I say... I used to be a flight attendant. Who cares?
What do you mean, who cares? I'm instantly interested.
Okay, well, wait. That was a bad way to put it, maybe.
Yeah, because that's an interesting job.
That could be. That's true. And it was in the 80s and 90s, so it was a while ago, and it was different standards.
Doubly
so that's
interesting.
True. Okay.
Pre-9/11 flight attendant, doubly interesting.
You know, it's so interesting because really the game did change after 9/11 with security and everything changed. And it's not fun as fun as I understand anymore. In my day, we were drinking. On red eyes.
You're right.
You
with
know.
The pilot.
Yeah. No, not on the plane. You know, we used to have a lot of confusion about a lot of the rules. Like, for instance, you're not permitted to drink within 12 hours of when you fly.
12 hours, okay.
We often thought it was it 12 feet from a plane?
Right.
Confusing.
Yeah.
So many rules. And, they did do random drug testing, though.
Oh, man.
Random alcohol testing.
To make sure you were doing drugs and alcohol.
Well, you just, you don't want to, like, in my opinion, like, at that time, it was a really important job to me, and I needed the job, you know, and I'd been a flight attendant for 7 years, and I didn't smoke weed for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to believe for my audience.
Sure, okay.
But there was a period where I didn't, because there was a lot of drug testing, and it wasn't just some drug testing. You'd be drug tested like every 20 flights.
No, if you need a job, that's not, weed isn't more no important
good.
Than that.
No good, no good. Although they do sell that stuff, You're in Luck, which is a catchy title.
Fake pee, right?
Yeah, fake pee. And the title is so, You're in Luck.
It's nice. That's nice. I'd buy stock in that company based on the title.
I think I would too.
Yeah, right. It's smart.
But if they're using like baby pee and stuff, that's kind of icky. You
know who's taking the baby pee?
That's what I'm saying.
Who's the baby pee collector?
Oh, I guess it doesn't have to be a baby.
Somebody dressed like the Hamburglar in the maternity ward?
I assume like everybody smokes weed. So,
here in the bubble that we live in, absolutely everyone does that. Bubble. It's a nice bubble. It took me a while. We've been here for like 6 years, coming up on 7, I think. And the first couple of years were no good. But now I'm like very, you're from Pittsburgh.
Good?
Oh man, so many things. You don't remember your first year here from Pittsburgh?
I loved it immediately.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I could say that I love it, but I had a tough time.
Alone, the weather alone, I play a lot of tennis. And so it's like automatically I was in a...
I forgot about snow this year. I forgot that it existed. Yeah. And then I saw a video on the internet and I was like,
they choose to live there.
Yeah, hear that, Switzerland? Crazy.
Yeah, you hear that?
I forgot about snow.
Up in the Alps, up there having a few Ricola.
Yeah, right.
Back. So wait
no
a
disrespect.
Second. So you really didn't like it, LA, for 4 years?
No. I didn't like LA for probably like at least the first year and a half.
Oh, you're not. Okay.
I moved to, dude, I was so good at having so many friends and so much supportive family for so long.
In Connecticut.
And then I just moved 3,000 miles away from
it's a huge step.
From everyone.
Huge, yeah.
And here it's like I still don't have the same or similar relationships to friendships I had and relationships I had back home. Yeah. You know, you just don't have the roots with people
except
in the shared
upbringing.
I
have to tell you, I've been here 21 years. And honestly, I really believe I get about one new friend a year.
That's fun.
I have 21 friends.
Yeah, that's a good number.
I mean, like, really good friends.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, like, for Christmas morning or
that's a dinner
Easter
party
or whatever. Big time. And it's, so if you just look on, just try to get one friend.
Okay.
A year.
Yeah, that's fine. I think I can handle that.
One every, you know what I mean, every 6 months. You can do more. You're very gregarious.
I mean, I really like people and I like being friends and I keep pushing people out, so I'm making room.
Wait, why do you push people out?
Oh, man, there's a variety of reasons.
Do you put them in your act?
No, not really.
Okay.
I make my act a lot about me, so I never accidentally steal from anybody else.
Yeah. Well, that's the best way to be, really, because then you can't...
Steve Martin thing.
Yeah, it's very true. If you talk about yourself, how could anybody duplicate it, or how could you be accused of stealing jokes?
Exactly.
But really, you don't draw upon... The fact that you push people out? I mean, why are you self-sabotaging, or what are you doing?
No. I just recognize, like... I have a wife who I get along with real well. She's like it's very corny, but she's like a best friend.
Uh-huh.
So she's really the only friend that I need. And then I think everyone else I can kind of take or leave, you know, because I got my rock and I have stand up. And aside from that, it's like I'm putting all my energy into both of those things.
Right.
So it's like everything else, if it's not going well or if it's not feeling right, it's just a distraction. It can bounce out.
Wow, that's intense. Those are intense feelings. How long have you been married?
2 years, a little over 2 years.
Not a lot.
No.
Is she from Connecticut? Where is she from?
She's also from Connecticut. Yeah, she moved out here with me.
She stuck together. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's really exciting. That's intense. Those are intense feelings.
Yeah.
But it's been a while now, so it's not like you're faking it.
No, we passed the faking it stage.
That's nice. Mike Falzone, let me tell you what you should get your wife. I'm not kidding you. The next anniversary or, you know, you have maybe her birthday or just like a lovey-dovey date night, because it sounds like you guys are still doing it.
Hell yeah.
Why don't you get her Beta Brand pants? Do you see the ones I'm wearing right now?
Yes.
They are They look like dress pants. That's the whole thing. They're dress pant yoga pants. So they look like you're going to the office or you're going out to lunch or to somewhere that's not even like a business thing. Because I wore them the other night on stage at the Improv. Thank you very much. And my point is that they look like fancy, but in fact, they're yoga pants.
Sneaky comfortability.
Super sneaky comfortability. They are wrinkle resistant and they've got this four-way stretch pont knit fabric. And then they've got these dress pant details like faux zippers, pockets, front buttons, and belt loops. And then you can tell your lovely wife that she can get them in like a straight leg, skinny, cropped, boot cut. What do you guess mine are? What do you think my pants are right
now? I'm going to say boot cut.
They are boot cut.
Nice.
That was intense because I wear boots all the time.
Perfect.
I mean, you don't have to wear boots with them, but in fact, it's in the title.
But it works.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they come in standard colors like black and navy, gray, khaki. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, you guys, you're going to absolutely love Beta brand pants. Millions of women cannot be wrong, and they agree that these are the most comfortable pants you're ever going to wear to work. So you guys, visit betabrand.com/storyworthy to get 20% off yours. Again, it's betabrand.com/storyworthy, all lowercase, and you'll get 20% off your Beta brand pants. You guys are going to absolutely love these yoga pants. Again, it's betabrand.com. It's lowercase, betabrand.com/storyworthy, and you are going to thank me. That's my point. Mike Falzone, your wife is going to thank me.
I can't wait. Do they make them in a big butt version? Because my wife has a big butt.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a stretch pant, isn't it?
Yeah, so you can do
anything you want. And they have petite sizes. They have small, medium, large. Like they have the whole gamut of
good
sizes.
So tiny legs, big butt. That's where she's at.
That's not a bad thing.
No, not at all. I'm not saying it is. No, she's Albanian.
Albanian. Isn't that interesting?
It's like a tougher Italian.
Where is Albania? I thought it was in New York. Isn't it the capital of New York?
Most of them are in New York.
Albany, New York.
Yeah.
That was funny.
She's from Albany. Yeah, that's it.
When I think of Albany, oh no, when I think of Albania, mm-hmm. I think of like a Miss Universe.
Okay.
Because I think they have a lot of, isn't it very exotic and beautiful, beautiful people there?
I'm going to say yes, because if there's any Albanian people listening to me
like
and I
wife.
Said no, yeah. they would
that
find
would be
me.
Bad. Where is she?
So her family is Kosovar, so they're from Kosovo.
But where is that? I'm still not.
You know, there's mountains over there. And
yeah, but give me some.
Like Macedonia.
Macedonia.
Yeah.
So we are in
Eastern European.
Eastern European. So we're in
by Italy,
let's say,
but not
Poland, and we head east, Turkmenistan.
Sure.
Kazakhstan.
Kosovo.
No, I'm just saying. That's
it has
region.
To be around there somewhere.
Yeah, it's got
to
be.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen.
I couldn't point to my home state on a map, so I'm not the.
Just go to the top right. I can give you that suggestion. Yeah. It's a little tiny rectangle.
Yeah.
It's always the smallest little thing on a map, like
right.
putting a puzzle.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, listen, we're going to get to Mike's story in just a second. But before we do, I wanted to remind you guys to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Storyworthy. I make it very simple for you. That's one thing, Mike. I'm a giver.
Good.
Do you know what I mean?
As you should be as a podcast host.
I think so too. And listen, I would be remiss not to talk to you about my new podcast, Screwed Up Stories, with comedian Rachel O'Brien. Do you know her?
Rachel O'Brien. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fabulous, stunning, funny girl.
Yeah.
And I'm super happy to be working with her. And we've been doing this now since December.
Mm-hmm.
We've got about 25 shows in the can and things are going well.
Awesome.
We had all women on for the first like 20 shows.
Cool.
Because the idea is like different generations of women. But now we're introducing men.
You ran out of women.
No, we didn't run out of women, but we were suggested to us.
Yeah.
By the network.
Oh, good.
And when the network.
That's a very 2019. Women, no men. Get them out of here.
Well, listen, women are trending upwards.
Absolutely.
And when the network says you should bring in some men.
Yeah.
Then you do that.
Dude, it'll be another 20 episodes till you get a white guy in there.
Well, the first man we had on was a gay psychic.
Oh, cool.
So we're easing into the transition to men.
Did he tell you who was going to be on for the next 20 episodes?
Yeah, and Dr. Drew is coming in.
Oh, man, nice. Yeah.
Dr. Drew paints himself thin.
Is he a nice guy?
Do you know what I mean? He's a great guy. I've known him from before. Yeah, he's a really great guy. It's exactly like when you hear Dr. Drew, that's exactly who he is.
Oh, okay.
He's like the exact same guy.
Dr. Drew.
Very cool.
Dr. Drew seems very cool. I was thinking about Dr. Phil. I don't know why I pictured Dr. Phil.
He plays tennis and I play tennis. Uh-huh. I keep wanting to get invited to his plays, like Kirk Fox plays with him and a couple other comics.
Yeah.
So I'm always like, when am I coming in?
Dude, Kirk Fox is the shit. He was the first dude. He was the first like paid regular at the Comedy Store to be nice to me, and I'll never forget that.
He's a wonderful guy, and he's super funny. And he's totally unique.
Yes.
And he has a new baby girl.
Yes, he does.
So he's a neat guy. Yeah,
he's a dad.
I like him a lot. He's a dad. But let's talk about you, shall we?
Okay.
All right, you guys. Mike Falzone is here right now, as you know. He was one of the very first creators to establish yourself on YouTube. Mm. Those are very big words.
It is now. Yeah. That was nothing for a long time, and now it seems like a thing.
It really does. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like, who started Fox Network, you know? Oh, the Simpsons.
Well, I didn't start the website.
No, but I mean, it just seems like, if you would talk about, like, Fox, what was the big first show? Simpsons.
Yeah, I'm the Simpsons of YouTube.
Don't.
Without a doubt.
Listen, so you are from the great state of Connecticut. I don't know. You put great in there. I didn't say that.
Did I?
It's a state.
Oh, that's somebody else wrote that bio. I just copy and paste
it every week. That's
all
right. That's all
you can't write a bio about yourself. It's difficult.
It is weird. I know it's weird. Anyway, you do play stand-up clubs all over town, including the Improv, of course, the Laugh Factory, and the Comedy Store. Those are like the three majors. Mm-hmm. And so you absolutely have experience here in Los Angeles, and you have not been here that long that you probably still are familiar and know a lot about open mics. So I'm really anxious to hear your story. You were also in 2016 nominated for a Shorty Award in the category of the funniest YouTube comedian.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nominated.
But still, it's always grateful. Aren't you always grateful to be nominated?
I'm grateful that I was almost the funniest YouTube comedian.
To be called a YouTube comedian, I mean, are these all sets that you put up or other people are shooting you and putting them up? Or how are they judging that?
I honestly don't know. I didn't even know how I got nominated for these things.
How funny.
It's just like, you know, these so awards random. And I read somewhere that... like awards and accolades are only important so that the general public knows that you're talented without them actually having to see you.
Yeah.
You know? So it's nice to be nominated for a thing, but I'm not like an awards person. I wonder if I'd be saying this if I won.
But people do need to be able to, categorize people and quantify things.
Like, why should I listen to this person? Well, they were nominated a couple years ago.
And it's the same way people say, did you graduate college or didn't you?
Yeah.
Did you? You know? And nobody's going to say, well, what were your grades like? Because nobody cares.
Right.
You just say, yes, I have a degree. And then you're better.
You're 100% right.
Who knows why?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
All right, you guys, you can find Mike over on Twitter at Mike Falzone. Mike, FALZONE. That's easy enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Mike Falzone.
Thank you so much. I'm going to wait till you guys are done clapping. Okay, so when I first moved out here, I got very sick on the East Coast, and I after I got better, I came kind of within a couple inches of my life. It was not a good time.
You have to tell us.
Well, I had my appendix burst on the operating table, which kind of is like breaking a bag of poison inside of you. Mm-hmm. And then I got like a sepsis of my entire body, which is like a entire body infection. And then after that, after they cleared all that up, they found they sent me home for like a week, and they found a blood clot in my lung. Pulmonary embolism, they call it, which is like the second time I almost died that month. So
they took that out?
They didn't take it out, but they pumped me full of like intravenous blood thinners. And then I was on blood thinners for like a year and a half after that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a scary time.
Yeah.
So after all of that got cleared up, I was in Connecticut making YouTube videos. And at the time I was pursuing, music and comedy. And, I had some opportunities to come out west and go to LA. And I had a manager out here and stuff like that. And they were like, listen, we can keep sending you whatever we can give you on this side of the country. Like, you can go from Connecticut to New York to do something once in a while, or you can come move here and get opportunities kind of quicker, and it comes a little, you know, easier out here. So after I got better, I was like, okay, well, if I'm gonna do this thing, I'm gonna do it where I have the biggest possibility of it happening, and I'm gonna go at it 100%, rather than like, you know, I'm here in my safety net in Connecticut. So I moved away from the safety net, and me and my girlfriend at the time came out here, And so I started really going at it with the stand-up thing. In Connecticut, I couldn't really go to open mics all that often because I was in Connecticut. There was like one place that had a comedy club and it was in a casino somewhere and they didn't have open mic. So I would have to go on a train to New York City or by car to New York City, like an hour, hour and a half to go bomb for 4 minutes and then ride the train back and just like stew in it, you know, and then come back to Connecticut. So I came out here and I kind of learned about the open mic scene out here and the fact that you could hit multiple places in a night and you can get better that way. Not that it was easy or not that it always takes a lot of time and it's never a great experience, but it's something that you have to do, you know, if you want to earn your chops. Stand-up comedy is one of those things where you only get better the more you do it, you know? So it's like you have to go out and you have to forge through all this stuff. So there's this insanely helpful website called the Comedy Bureau.
Right.
This guy Jake runs it, and Jake is a very interesting guy, but he did kind of this ingenious thing, which is kind of this rotating list of, you know, as soon as you come to LA, you could see every single night the tens of open mics that you could hit in a night. So somebody told me about this.
Is Jake a comedian? I'm just curious.
I think he has done stand-up before. I don't know how often he does it. I've never seen him do it, but I have friends that have been like, he goes up every once in a while.
Because it's such a thorough site, the Comedy Bureau.
Yeah,
it's really thorough.
I would say he's definitely like a student of it, and he's definitely like, he has his finger on the pulse of like, what shows are going on, who's doing them, who is doing well.
I could have put Story Smash in there, because we do call an audience
hit him
member.
Up.
I will, for sure.
Yeah. So, I got sick of doing a lot of the, what I would consider not great open mics. And I was getting really frustrated and, you know, half the time you don't go up because a lot of people show up. It's a lottery system. They draw your name out of a bucket, like you were saying before. And I was like, dude, I'm wasting a lot of time. I got to start going where it matters. So I remember the first time I went to open mic at the Improv, I was still not good at all. This is like 6 or 7 years ago. And I went up there.
Was this the main stage or the lab?
This is the lab.
It was even 6 years ago, it was the lab.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went up there and I started a joke by saying, I don't know if this is funny, but, and that's kind of like, you don't want to show weakness up there. And that sentence is like the personification of like, that's the most weakness you could show.
It is, because if you're not the quarterback of the game, like who's in charge?
Yeah. This is like the nose tackle saying, I'll take it from here.
it's such a disclaimer.
Yeah. Really bad. So from that moment, the host of the open mic kind of heckled me. Not off the, in my heart, I was off the stage. But he was like, he goes, we'll tell you if it's funny. Like, you're wasting everybody's time right now. Like, what are you doing? And I was at the point where I was still like super intimidated to be in that building. And I was like, okay, you know, here are my 3 minutes in this prestigious building, on this prestigious stage, or the stage next to the prestigious stage. And I was like, I'm so lucky to be here. Here it goes. And, you know, now I'm in this conversation with the host who's like, you're wasting everybody's time. So I go and I fumble through my jokes, which, spoiler alert, weren't funny at all. And I came home and I was like, dude, I don't know if this is for me. I had a horrible experience. Maybe this is like Los Angeles telling me it's not my thing. Maybe I should go back to like being strictly music. Because at this point in my career, I was doing shows that were like half singer-songwriter stuff and half like crowd work and comedy. And then I would end with a comedy song. And it was very much like a transitional period of me getting rid of a guitar type thing.
Right.
So I went home and I didn't go out to open mic for like a month after that. And then at one point, I was getting bummed out that I wasn't moving forward. I wasn't getting better at anything because I wasn't trying anymore. You know, I had decided that I was not good enough and I was just going to figure out what was next.
So how many times did you go up and then you were thinking that?
I mean, probably for a couple months. Just like going to pizza places that would have an open mic or like a cafe or whatever, very
coffee
low
shop,
stakes.
Anything, yeah.
And then you go to a real one, you have a terrible experience, you know? So I came home and I was like, dude, I'm not, you know, whatever. So I was done for like a month. And then I had a conversation with my wife where she was like, we didn't move 3,000 miles away from everyone who loves us so you can not do stand-up comedy. And so that was kind of like a huge wake-up call, yeah. As was, you know, in the same way that getting sick was a huge wake-up call on the East Coast to move to the West Coast and to pursue the dream. So I'm like, I'm going to go through all that and I'm going to move away from like the hundreds of friends I have out here and my supportive giant Italian family and her supportive giant Albanian family. And I'm going to come not do it.
Yeah.
So ever since then, I've looked for something to do every single night. And, you know, like you said, at the beginning of the show, I've been on stage and all these amazing places and the mecca of comedy, the Comedy Store and the Improv. And, you know, I remember sitting in my office and making videos on the East Coast, watching, I would give myself little breaks and I'd watch stand-up videos on the Laugh Factory website.
Yeah.
And then like, I have two videos on the Laugh Factory website.
That's
now.
That's amazing.
And they're YouTube and stuff like
good
that.
Good feeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about open mics in terms of what makes them good? What makes them bad? What happens at the open mic? I mean, all of it.
I think no matter what, whether it's good or bad, because there are both good and bad open mics, but no matter what, it's always no bullshit. You know, it's like if you're... There's no hierarchy of comedy. There's no boss of comedy who's like, you're hired or you're fired. People take themselves out, you know? So
what do you mean by that? Because you do get booked or you don't.
Yeah, I mean, you can get... That's a building. That's not comedy. Like, you can get booked to do comedy at a building and somebody could tell you, like, yes or no. But comedy in general, like, anyone can just say they're a comedian, you know? And no one's going to fire you from that.
Yeah, same as podcasting.
Same thing. Yeah. Because you do it yourself.
Right. So you're self-producing, making your own content.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying, like, at an open mic, so you're saying it's so honest because, first of all, in my opinion, like, nobody is dying to be there.
Yeah.
They need to be there more than they want to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, they want to get on stage, but they more need to get on stage to polish their craft because there's really no other way to go about it. You just can't read about stand-up and then do it.
Mm-hmm.
It has to change and evolve. So what's your process?
I write down everything that might be even remotely funny in my phone.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always taking notes and then going back and trying to elaborate.
Notes or what program?
Yeah, in the notes application. I have like 1,000 little folders that are all like subfolders of something else.
Wow.
And it's really a mess in there. But it's also like, you know, Steve Martin said something like our brains are an idea factory and like those things that we think about so many things, especially now it's like we're always so distracted. There's like shit all over this table, for example.
Yeah.
Like there's always something to take your mind off something. So if you think of something that might be remotely valuable, you gotta at
write
least just jot it
because
down.
Because if you don't, there's a good chance you're not gonna remember
it. It can go away.
And the thing is comics, a lot of comics use notebooks. I always used to use a notebook, but now I use my phone as well and I use notes because that I do have with me.
Yeah.
I don't always have a pencil and pen.
Right.
And like also in the car, like I'll just hit like, you know, Siri, make a note.
Yeah.
You know.
Whatever. Also very, very valuable.
And
you know
helps.
What else is great is like if you're always, this was a tip Gary Goldman said on Twitter recently. If you're always a phone person, take a day and write out all your jokes on a computer or write them out freehand. Write them out in a way that you're not used to and different things come out.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's so, I do the same thing. I mean, I'm just starting again, but I did it with storytelling as well. If you have an idea, you jot it down, but then it has to transpose into a more solid document.
Uh-huh.
At least for me, I'm very visual. I need to see... You know, in 18-point Helvetica.
Yeah.
No, but I need to see, like, what am I... Because there's beats and there's waves and it's up and down. So then you tape your sets, of course, right?
Oh, yeah, all of them.
Always tape your sets.
I always get so mad when I forget.
Oh, that's the worst. But isn't it the worst to listen back? To me, it's
like, oh, they're all... Even if it's good, it sucks to listen back. Because it's never as good as it felt.
It's excruciating. But again, it's the only way to learn and change very slowly. And it always evolves.
Mm-hmm.
Very few... comedians are word for word.
Yeah, yeah. And that's less important than just like it when it comes to the actual recording. It's just listening for where the laughs are.
Yeah.
Like you might be doing a joke for like 6 months before you listen back and hear where there are laughs where you didn't expect it. And then yeah. you're like, oh, there's a joke right there. I could fit in another funny joke. Then you're talking about like jokes per minute.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have like by the end of the month, if you go and you fatten everything up, you have like another twice as many jokes per minute. Right.
Right. And if you get 3 minutes a month,
right.
you've got, what is that a year? I can't do math.
Or even, no, I'm very
hour
bad
and at it.
It's not the, I'm not the person to ask.
But it is, it's like a slow process that mm-hmm. just keeps evolving and changing. And then even when you think you're done, you're not done.
That's the best part. That's my favorite part of being friends with comedians is yeah. talking about the fact that it's this evolving puzzle yeah. and you're always trying to like, if I put this word here and if I say this before this and like talking shop with comedians about that specific thing is
yeah,
my favorite.
Yeah, I think that maybe, well, I mean, open mics are of course super important because you need to get on stage. But like you said, especially here in Los Angeles, there are so many. That's the good news. But the mm-hmm. bad news is there's so many comics there mm-hmm. and you have to wait through so many comics and your name might not get pulled.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes a better way to go about it is to just ask three friends to coffee and then everybody gets 15 minutes like
sure
help me out for 15 minutes here's
you
what
need
I'm
a real
on.
Specific kind of friend though
and then well but if you've got three comedians I'm just saying like
yeah
I mean, if you've got to be givers and you really literally set a clock you set the stopwatch you
yeah.
get 15 you get 15 I get 15 and then we'll go back I mean I do that with storytelling
mm-hmm.
I do that with storytelling friends but I haven't and I with stand-up I used to do it with friends like coming to my apartment when I first started out here and we would have our own little open mics in the living room
fun
because really it's enough a lot of times. You know what I mean? An open
yeah,
mic,
but is it still like no bullshit?
It's still no bullshit. It's still no bullshit except for the fact that it's just preparing you to get on that stage that you have to get on.
Yes.
Because that's where you need to be to get the truth out, to get yeah. the real truth.
Yeah.
But it's no bullshit because at least you will get time to talk about things, dissect things.
Uh-huh.
And people are hopefully, the people in your group are, you know, looking at the technical aspects as much as you are.
That's why I'm saying you have to have like real specific friends. I would yeah. say the benefit that a regular open mic still has over that, unfortunately, is that it's a bunch of stranger comedians that don't give a shit about your material at all. So if you go to an open mic with a bunch of people who actively don't want to hear what you have to say, they're just yeah. waiting for their turn to talk,
right.
and you get a laugh out of those people, yeah. that's how you know it's really funny.
Yeah, I think I know what you're saying. I mean, I do know what you're saying, but there's also the fact that a lot of comedians are always writing in their notebook, etc., and they might hear something,
mm-hmm.
and their laugh might not be audible. And I do it all the time. Like, uh-huh. I'll say, like, I'll be like, oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I just say it's pretty funny. I'm
right.
not even laughing out loud. I'm just saying that's pretty funny.
Right. But I'm saying, like, imagine you could be in that, but there's nothing wrong with that mindset or that or having like a subdued reaction. But imagine if you know that you're like that and you'll say, oh, that's pretty funny. Imagine you get a laugh out of you, how funny that thing has to be
yeah.
to get an actual laugh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What do you, and we're going to wrap it up in a second, but what do you recommend for people who want to try stand up or they want to get up there? What do you recommend the first thing they should do is?
Everyone who wants to try should try.
Yes.
And you just have to, if you want to get better, the only way to get better is to do it as much as possible.
But what, like seriously, in terms of content, what's the first thing somebody should talk about?
Always write about yourself. Write pages and pages and pages about yourself.
But don't you think it's even more like what you look like right away?
Yeah, I mean, the way I got taught was that for the first like 20, 30 seconds, they don't even listen to they don't even hear your voice. They're just looking at you and judging you. And anything you could say that connects with what they're thinking, they immediately think you're a magician and you have some kind of like...
Because that's what they were thinking.
Yeah, yeah. They're like,
so
oh, this person
good.
Gets it.
I absolutely love that advice. That's
yeah.
really smart.
That's why you hear so many like, I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
I look like this cross with this.
Behind this, right.
Beep, beep, beep.
Yeah, behind the microphone pole or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I did that the other night and I got some good laughs, so I was quite
good.
Pleased. Yeah,
good.
It worked out well.
Good.
It worked out well. I have this friend, Penelope Lombard, that used to, I don't, she
what a great name.
Common anymore, but Penelope, she would go up and she would just say, I know I'm pretty. I would just bust out laughing because
yeah.
it's like, she's absolutely right. People are thinking you're pretty. That's what they're
well,
thinking.
Well, self-awareness is also a virtue in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It's very important to stick with the people who are self-aware.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And most people seem to be, because it's, you know, as beautiful it is out here, the weather, and to me, it's easy to live in terms of the food is always good, no matter what. All the food is good.
Except for the pizza. Everything else is amazing.
Have you been down to tomato pie down the street?
No, but I'm going to Masa.
Oh, yeah.
Tonight, which is like deep dish, whatever.
Interesting.
And I got my fingers crossed because I have yet to have really, really good pizza in the city of Los Angeles.
What do you want, like New York style or Chicago style?
Tonight, we want Chicago style, which is not the everyday pizza. I want a good
breakfast pizza.
I want an early morning pizza. No, I just want good. I come from Connecticut. I come from like a place with amazing pizza where Italians are and there's regular water.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think that tomato pie, and there's, I think, two or three locations, but I will direct you that way because they make a nice New York slice that is, it's a fair price and the dough is really good.
I'll pay, dude, I don't care about the price. Okay. I'll pay so much more than I should. I just want it to be good.
Interesting. Hey, real quick, what did your wife come out here to do? I mean, obviously be with
She's a hairdresser. She's a hairdresser in Santa Monica. She's charging rich people for their, for their hair.
I'm telling you, how lucrative is that? Because you gotta keep coming back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I love my hair guy. I've been going to my hair guy for 15 years.
Yeah, and that's what happens.
Amazing.
You know, you develop a relationship with that person. They're your therapist. They're,
$120 bucks every 6 weeks or 8 weeks, yeah. Right?
Bleach and tone.
How many, I don't know how many weeks in the year, that is not clear to me. The point is, there's a lot of numbers involved.
Yeah.
And I wonder, why is he so nice to me? Because after the, at the end of the day... Now, see, I shouldn't say that because he's a good friend of mine and he listens to this show.
Well, what were you going to say?
Big shout out to Salon Paul Florent in Studio City, California. Paul is over there and we'll take care of you. No, what I was going to say is I don't want him to think that I'm bitching about the money because he gives me a deal.
But also, is it not incredibly worth it? Do you feel better about your... And
we
that's another...
so much fun.
Laughing is great.
He always has a beer for you. He's a great guy.
That's also nice. That's very comforting. Mm-hmm. But it's like... Hairdressers, a good hairdresser can make you feel better about yourself. And isn't that worth, you know?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really neat. So you are fortunate because you have very long hair. You have a lot of hair. So
I don't utilize her services.
You lie.
I mean, I do, but way after I should. Like, I should have already gotten a haircut a bunch of times.
You haven't paid for a haircut in a long time, right?
I haven't.
Oh, God. I'm telling you, man. That would be crazy if you... Didn't take advantage of that little
piece of the pie. That would be nuts. Yeah. Right, I just don't get it cut often.
I can see that. Often enough. All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Again, tweet Mike over there on Twitter at Mike Falzone and then follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. And a big thank you to all the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you support my sponsors like Beta Brand, then they send me money. You see how that works?
Mm-hmm.
And then I feed my child.
Yeah.
She wants to eat. Every day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy how kids want to do that.
It's frustrating, but it's, you know, that's what it is. So thank you guys, because really, when you support my sponsors, you do support me. And on behalf of the very talented Mike Falzone, this has been so much
fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it the story where you be.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
Bake Off, the professionals, is back.
I'm going to have to call it for what it is, mediocre.
Whoa. Being very kind.
Teams of the best pastry chefs are battling to see who will rise to the top.
I felt that I'm eating a toothpaste.
The pressure is on and reputations are on the line. If the showstopper doesn't work, it's even more intense.
We have a showpiece.
It's beautiful.
Bake Off, the professionals. Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on Channel 4 and All 4.